cliffcentral.com.
So Brett, let me just let people know what we're doing here, because it's only week two. We've obviously been forced to reconfigure our whole lives because of lockdown. And the question that we're asking this morning is, couldn't we have thought of a better way to handle the coronavirus? Now, you've got some pretty weird ideas, always come from left field. And it's one of the reasons that I want to have you on the show and that we're talking to you every week. But obviously, we know about the mental health, the economic destitution, the fact that families have been damaged by this, community, society as a whole. And the worst of it is the idea that when lockdown ends, the virus resumes and you're back where you started. So there's no exit strategy being planned. Politicians are the most useless people to manage this thing, because politicians are only actually interested in themselves. So they're just going to try and do whatever it is that'll get them the least amount of blame and that will keep them in their jobs, because they need to win popularity contests to stay in their jobs. So we're going to discuss that, an alternative to lockdown, and how we might have been able to do this better. So Brett Cohen, for those of you who don't know, he's from the gas company. He's back for a new feature called The Alternative, which we started last week. And we'll take an alternative look at things once a week. And this means viewpoints, alternative solutions to problems that we've got, just like the gas company is into alternative energy. You know, you don't need to rely on Eskom. God knows we can't, because if you do, your fridge is not going to work, your stove's not going to work, you're going to be screwed. You can't even make your cup of tea like I'm having here this morning, because if I had a gas stove, though, I would never have to worry about this stuff. All we have to do, Brett, is figure out a way to do like gas internet.
Well, it can be done. You know, you can use gas to generate electricity. In fact, we do in times of crisis in South Africa. They use gas, natural gas, diesel. They've got all sorts of generators generating electricity when the coal power plants aren't manufacturing enough. So it can be done. That's not a big problem. Look, the bottom line is, you know, not just energy. You don't want to rely on the state for anything.
No, absolutely.
I think we make a mistake. I think part of the reason why politicians get away with what they get away with globally is because everybody in their own little small community seems to think that this is a localized problem. But the mess in government is a global problem. It's the same everywhere in the world.
Absolutely.
But nobody seems to be pushing up against it. Everybody seems to be going, well, this is just our government that's screwed. I don't know. The Norwegians have got it right.
You know, so what you're saying is so true. I mean, we spoke to Tim Kelly on Monday morning. He's from England, and his parents are going through the worst at the moment because they're in their very hard lockdown, and they might be that way until Christmas. You've got people like the governor of California and the governor of New York saying to Americans, you can't spend Thanksgiving and Christmas with your families. I mean, can you imagine that? If you are told by government that you can't go and be with the people you love at that time of year, that is where you've got to, someone's got to wake up and go, actually, I'm not going to let politicians tell me what I can and can't do. And I'm not afraid enough of this virus for it to put me in a position where I can't even be with my family. Are you kidding? Bullshit.
Yeah, it's insane, but it's even worse than that. I don't know if you've noticed, like there's this catchphrase that everybody seems to have nowadays. As soon as we see something that we don't like, remember we spoke about the woke mob last week and righteousness. As soon as we see something that we feel doesn't have a moral high ground, we're behaving in a way that's inappropriate, then the government needs to step in and correct it. That's become our belief structure. Yeah. That's kind of what we want. And that's the most insane way of thinking about the world.
Well, before we talk about the alternative ways we could have handled the lockdown, I just want to hear your thoughts on something that was a big story yesterday. And we've talked about it a little bit this morning. But these social media platforms, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey had to appear in front of the Senate yesterday. And I'm really torn, because I don't want government interfering in private businesses, and I don't want government regulating private businesses. As far as possible, they should stay the hell out of it. You know, again, you're giving power to politicians, and when you do that, you very seldom get it back. But at the same time, you've got people like Jack Dorsey, who's frankly running a platform that's doing more damage than good, if you ask me. And Twitter is having a negative influence on many people, mental health-wise, from a point of view of nastiness, let alone hate speech and influencing elections. So how do you feel that should go down? Because you don't want the government to regulate them, but at the same time, they can't be allowed to just do whatever the money directs them to do, because they have huge influence on the population.
That's a complicated problem. I think to start off with, if you're banning something or if you're trying to ban something, you're probably doing it wrong. right off the bat. It's kind of like the same argument as if you rear end a car, it's your fault. It's kind of the same thing. There's very, very, very rare cases where banning is the right approach.
Right. To the thing. Okay.
The second big problem over there is that you don't, now you've got this sort of mix. Is it government regulating it or is it regulating itself? Is this a private company or is it a government regulated company that's kind of a private company? So now you've got a world where the government's telling them what to do. They're being directed by ad and ad revenue. It's going to be really messy trying to understand how this thing's going to fit together. Number two. Number three, free speech is primary. It should never, ever be banned, whether it's hate speech or not hate speech. I think that I'm going to say something very controversial now, and a lot of people will be very angered with me, but you have the right to be an asshole. You, in fact, have the right to hate. You have the right to not like other people. You have the right to judge other people.
Right.
What you don't have the right to do is influence the outcome of that person's life. So your rights are not allowed to impose on another person's rights.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that the moment we're saying you're not allowed to think something or you're not allowed to say something, you're effectively saying you're not allowed to think something. And so we're going into a very, very Orwellian world relatively quickly. Yes, Twitter is a frightening engine, but the government controlling Twitter is a much more frightening outcome.
Absolutely, because they can back that up, you know, with state force. It's the same way they get you to pay your taxes. They're the only ones with a gun.
100%. And, you know, there could be, there's a conspiracy theorist in me that says the government would love to have control over the social media platforms control over the normal media platforms for many years.
Yeah.
So there's a bigger game at play over here. Jack Dorsey's mad. But I actually think in some ways Twitter is the nicest of the platforms because it's unpolished, because it's so rude and crass. But I can see the concerns around it. I can see the issues around that. I think the people need to work out how to regulate that.
All right. So if you were in government, because this is something I've thought about a lot, but I honestly don't have answers. I know you've spent a lot of time thinking about this. You read an enormous amount about this, and you've obviously having run your business through lockdown, you must have learned some interesting lessons too. So tell me about the alternative ways we could have handled the lockdown.
So I think the lockdown, if we ever look at the lockdown shouldn't happen at all. I don't think we should be locking anything down. Again, you're back to banning. You're effectively saying, right, everybody's equal. Everybody has an equal chance of dying of this virus. We're all sort of equally susceptible. What about grandma? Nobody's allowed to leave the house.
Right.
It's an insane. It's you're clubbing it with a brick instead of trying to find the nuance in it and trying to solve the problem more sensibly.
Yeah.
I think probably a much, much cleverer approach. I mean, if we just talk about the finance first to set this thing up so that I can show you where we're going. If we talk about the money that was collected, if we have a look at what happened in May or March or whenever the thing kicked in South Africa and we started talking about lockdown and we started having, I think it was April, started having a look at what needs to happen. Patrice put some money up. The De Beers put some money up. The Anglo-Americans put some money up. A whole lot of money came into a fund. I think they had 3 billion rand at one stage in the
that's
fund.
Right.
The 3 billion rand was out in a month. It was gone. It was dedicated to businesses that were in trouble. It was dedicated to, I don't know, some of it was stolen, I suppose. I don't know where all the money went. But that's a lot of money. It's a reasonable amount of money. That's over and above what the government set aside to do it with and what other provisions have been put in place, money being borrowed, money's being printed out of thin air. Money's sort of all over the show in terms of that. And yet all the economies globally are in real trouble. And I think we must again talk about this isn't a South African problem. This is a global problem. South Africa really is following what the rest of the world is doing to a large extent.
Correct.
Everybody except Sweden, it would appear. So if you'd taken all that money and you'd said, right, who is highly susceptible? Who is comorbid? Who stands a chance of losing their life? Or who is at real risk of death in this scenario? We know the numbers. We knew the numbers in April already. The Chinese told us the numbers. They told us that children are fine to a very large extent. The morbidity rate in children is less than 0.1%.
Right.
And as what you go older and older and older, like all diseases, it ratchets up. But in the case of COVID, what seemed to happen is as you get to 60, 70, 80, it really ratchets up. That's why you see a place like Italy was decimated because they have a relatively old population. Then decimated again. It's going to happen again. The UK, I guess, maybe also has a relatively old population. I don't know why their numbers are quite as ugly as they are. You have those sort of problems. So a cleverer approach might be to say, right, these are the things that make you susceptible. Publish it, make it known, use the Gareth Cliff Show, use the SABC if you absolutely have to. Let the people know that these are the things that we think put you at risk. If you can identify as somebody who's at risk in this thing, then it's on you to do what you need to do. What we will do is we will make funds available, that 3 billion plus, 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 and we will pump it into the health sector.
Yes.
Because that's where the money is going to be needed. And you will be able to apply. So if you are comorbid and you have a high risk of dying or of really being severely impacted by this thing, we will make a fund available to you. You can apply. We will make sure that your employer cannot fire you. You are protected for the duration of your illness or the time that you need to be defended in this illness. And we will look after those numbers. And everybody else, those who are comorbid and are prepared to take the risk, and everybody who feels like I'm relatively safe, this thing's not actually affecting me, can carry on with their normal lives. So we're still generating money. We still have an economy. We're still building up funds that we can pump into the same COVID fund next year and keep the world going. That, to me, would have been a much more sensible approach than this mindless.
Know, here's the worry I have, and it was brought up by a friend of mine last night. He said, problem is now that government have figured out that they can do something like a lockdown, they're going to use this as an excuse to do all kinds of other stupid shit in the future.
They have already. That's part of the reason why they've gone with a lockdown. That's why it's been popular, especially in the UK and the US, because they so strongly influence us. It's actually staggering and a little bit sickening. But be that as it may, that's a different conversation. The US governmental system, their whole sort of political system is opportunistic and on the front foot. Make no mistake, they're aggressive and they're reasonably corrupt. And when they saw that there was an opportunity to pass martial law over here and to have an environment where the laws that get passed don't have to go through the usual process to be vetted, they jumped on it. And so did ours, and so did every other government in the world. Who wouldn't? If I was in government, I'd probably do it myself.
Yeah, I mean, it's a way for them to aggregate power. And who doesn't want to 100%. Get more power to themselves, you know? So I totally agree with your measure. I mean, there's actually a name for it. I think it's called focused group isolation or something like that. I can't remember exactly what the term is for it. But this is precisely, obviously, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, you know, everybody has 20/20 vision. But this is the way, if we're ever stuck with any of this stuff going forward, if let's say there's a new virus that comes out or there's some other, we should really approach it having learned something. Because if we do exactly the same stupid things that we did this year, then we have no one to blame but ourselves.
Look, I don't see that happening in the short term. I think in the longer term, perhaps, I think some political restructuring needs to happen globally. And I think it's coming. I do feel like there's a lot of resentment towards how the system is put together at the moment. Yeah. There's a lot of talk also, you know, on the fringes of how it will change in the future and what needs to happen. But I think until that political change happens, it's status quo. I mean, the World Health Organization, bless them for what they're worth, originally said lockdown is the way you have to do this. Do it immediately. Sort yourself out. It's what China did. They sorted their problems out, which we should get back to because it's quite an interesting scenario around China. They've changed their mind 180 degrees now, and they're saying lockdown is the worst thing you can do. Please try avoid lockdown and find another way to solve this problem. So the organizations that we put in place after the Second World War, when we went through all of that pain and we started putting these things, that NATO and the UN, the World Health Organization, the World Bank, all these other bits and pieces that we put together under the auspices of sort of having central bodies that were neutral, that could control these things, have had to do nothing for 70 or 100 years. And so they've gotten fat and useless and really aren't providing the guidance that we need. We're in a leadership void. The governments around the world have no leadership in them, or very rarely do.
Absolutely.
Perhaps we can name 3 or 4 in the world that really you can say are outstanding, if that many. And then the organizations that are neutral that are supposed to be backing them up are either corrupt or just...
I couldn't agree more. I think that's a spot on summary of the problem from a global point of view. So listen, it's always good to get your point of view on this, because I do think that it's unique. And you know, the problem is that like lots of people have good ideas, but very few people actually are brave enough to say them. So it's good to hear yours. And just so that we know, because I've been to your place here in Centurion, it's just up the road, and you've got everything. What kinds of appliances are you guys bringing in now? Because I know that there are lots of people who are thinking about going for gas, and it's not just the things that we would expect, like a gas stove or a gas fridge, for example. There are other things too. I mean, like, what are the more interesting ones that you've got coming in at the moment?
So in terms of energy supply, you want a hybrid supply. I think it's a little immature. A lot of people come in and say, we want to get off the grid. We want to look at an alternative.
Sure.
You know, sure, I can see the justification for it. It's still very expensive to get off the grid.
That is.
Completely. And it requires a change of lifestyle. And that's the thing to realize. If you're prepared to change your lifestyle, if you're a bit of a hippie and you can live with some of the changes that need to happen, then it makes sense. But to try to get off the grid completely and not have grid backup at all in the current world where we are now probably isn't the right approach. You probably want a hybrid approach of some sort. So we need to put that in there first. In terms of the alternatives, you've got electricity, you've got gas, and a whole lot of other hydrocarbons that you could burn. And then you've got the renewables, which all effectively generate electricity in some form or another. But generally don't generate enough electricity for things that really need power, which are motors, which are quite a difficult problem to solve. Heating, cooling, and cooking and water heating are the areas where electricity doesn't really shine. It's pretty good at running the internet, like you've alluded to already. although if you saw the size of some of the machinery that Microsoft and Google put together, they actually sink them under the ocean to keep them cool. So there's quite a lot of power that goes into those things also. They certainly not run off solar power, although they're converting too. In terms of gas, where it really shines, water heating, space heating.
Well, listen, you say water heating. I mean, I only realized like the thing that probably pushes up my electricity bill more than anything else is my kettle.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, geezers and kettle. Those are the things that are sucking up most of the energy.
Yeah, 100%. And oven. If you bake in the oven a lot, I don't know, different people cook differently, but the oven also chews up quite a lot of power. Yeah,
luckily, that's not an issue in my house. I don't even know where to switch my oven on.
You stop off at a certain white meat chicken place on the way home.
I don't think I could bake bread even if I had a master chef showing me how. I'd probably screw it up. All right, listen, this is all very, very helpful. We will chat to you again in a few days' time. Thank you so much, Brett. Always good to get your point of view. And you can find out more about the gas company. They're online as well. But I would advise you go and actually check the place out. It's pretty damn impressive. And they have awesome staff, and they've got a whole... They can come in and set you up. I mean, they can help you install. There are different ways to do it, different ways to pay for it. It's really, really cool. Go and take a look at them. All right. Thanks, Brett.
Wow. What a punt. I should have had you as a wingman in my youth, mate.
Dude, we only bring clients onto Cliff Central if we know that their products are things that one or two of us use. And I mean, I've been there. I was a client of yours before you were a client of mine. So
that's true.
And then, Brett, I'm also here and very willing to write a theme song for you guys.
Stop.
I want to set you up.
No, please, for God's sake. All right.
Oh, come on, you got to let it run, Gareth. There's something, this is magic.
There's something I can do. I want to set you up.
Yeah, on second thought, maybe Gareth's got a point here.
Let me save you from embarrassment. All right, Brett. Thanks, man.
Cheers, gents. I appreciate it. You guys have a great day.
Cheers, dude. Bye-bye.
Catch you later. CliffCentral.com.